Welcome to our first podcast on the subject of Internal Communication Practice Governance, ICPG. Over the next few minutes, we're going to look at the question of whether it's even needed. Do line managers really need to get the same kind of support with their IC activities as they get with their budget management? So let's think about this. Because there are plenty of folk, both internal communication specialists and non-specialists, who are doing loads of really high-class internal communication work. Yet huge numbers of people, one recent poll put the figure as high as 91% of line managers who seem to struggle with at least some aspects of internal communication. And this has probably been going on for as long as organisations have existed. So why hasn't it been sorted? Is it that some people are so ashamed of their inabilities that they won't admit to them? Is there an element of emperor's new clothes going on? You know, no one else is admitting they don't get it, so I don't feel safe to do so either. Could this be one source of some people's imposter syndrome, perhaps? Maybe, maybe not, but it wouldn't be that surprising, would it? But perhaps there's something else that could be depressing the quality of many people's IC activities. Maybe there might be some Dunning-Kruger going on. Now, if you're not familiar with the Dunning-Kruger effect, it was back in 1999 that two researchers at Cornell University, David Dunning and Justin Kruger, published the results of their study into incompetence. Their findings showed that in Western cultures, when people haven't been taught how to do something and or there are no empirical standards against which they can evaluate their ability, unskilled people often tend to overestimate their ability and often fail to recognize genuine skills in others. This is often referred to as illusory superiority, something from which, sadly, pretty much all of us are likely to suffer in some aspects of our lives. But there's more to it than that, because Dunning and Kruger also found that skilled people often underestimate their abilities, believing instead that, well, because the activity comes easily to them, surely anyone can do this. So we need to tread carefully here. Communicating is, after all, a very personal activity about which many folk can understandably be somewhat touchy. So even suggesting to some people they might be better at it can often be difficult. With some folk, if you were to say to them, do you think you could write this a bit differently? You might just as well have asked them, excuse me, have you ever heard of deodorant? You know, it really can be that level of insult for some people. And if we put all of this together, perhaps the reality is that when it comes to internal communication, any organisation may contain managers with varying combinations of Dunning-Kruger, emperor's new clothes and imposter syndrome. And we wonder why burnout happens. Seriously. And maybe we shouldn't be surprised if a majority of managers want to think they're good at internal communication because it's an activity they do pretty much every day. But against what standard are they evaluating their ability when they tell themselves they're good at it? Is it the right standard, the best standard, the healthiest standard for your organisation? Again, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Crucially though, and this is a really big deal, for those managers who aren't as good at internal communication as they need to be, whether they think they are or not, there's a strong case for saying it really isn't their fault they're not good enough. In fact, not only is it not their fault, it's nobody's fault. But how could that be? Well, as we see it, there are three possible routes to internal communication expertise. So let's look at each one in turn and find out how viable they would have been for line managers up to now. Starting with route number one. In 2003, the project to map the human genome was completed. And since then, there's been a stack of research into the genome itself. And at intervals, we hear stories on the news about some new discovery or other, you know, the smart gene, the fat gene, the ginger gene, and so on. But it was only quite recently that scientists worked out the function of a gene which, for non-geneticists like us, they have dubbed the internal business communication gene. Now, no other animal has this gene. It is unique to the human genome, and it remains dormant throughout childhood and adolescence. However, when someone leaves school or university and goes out to work, this gene will kick in at that point. And because it's part of human DNA, it enables anybody to instinctively know exactly how to identify what needs communicating to whom, when, and how in any business situation they ever encounter without anybody ever having to teach them. Brilliant, isn't it? Yeah, there's just one small problem, isn't there? It doesn't exist. You know it doesn't exist. Everybody knows it doesn't exist. However, pretty much every single organization in the world, it seems, behaves as if it did exist, because they do expect people to just know how to identify what needs communicating to whom, when, and how without being taught. Or do they? Hang on a second. What about all those communication courses that managers can go on? Let us turn our attention to route number two. Because traditional business communication courses, you know, writing skills, presentation skills, interpersonal skills, and so on, well, they all tend to focus on how to execute communications, not how to identify what, if anything, needs communicating to whom, when, or why in the first place. So even if managers are getting communication training, that all-important front end of the process is missing. Is it any wonder email overload has been with us for a quarter of a century? So if managers don't have an internal communication gene, which they don't, and aren't being taught how to identify what needs communicating to whom, when, and why, which they aren't, what's left? For this, we need to turn our attention to route number three. Now, here we have a couple of alternatives. One thing people can do is just kind of throw their hands up in despair and resort to either beating themselves up or, you know, adopting a kind of belligerent apathy. You know, just bash, 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 bash it out, send. Or worse still, bash, 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 reply to all. You know, now, these are options, of course, but they're hardly healthy ones, are they? Alternatively, though, they could try improving their internal communication practices over time by means of, well, how could they do that? Trial and error, really. So for pretty much everybody, then, trial and error is kind of the best we can hope for. It's the best case scenario. Unfortunately, it has three main drawbacks. Firstly, it ain't quick. It can take ages for people to become as good as the organisation needs them to be at internal communication. Secondly, even if they do spend ages trying to get better, there's absolutely no guarantee they'll actually become good enough. You yourself may have received many an unnecessary email from someone who's been in business for 10, 20, 30 years plus. So from a success perspective, trial and error is inevitably a kind of hit and miss approach. Now, both of those things are problematic, but they are as nothing compared to the third problem of relying on trial and error. See, trial and error has two components to it, doesn't it? The first is trial, and the second is, yeah, leading us to a kind of inconvenient truth, isn't it? Which is that even though it is the best case scenario, relying on trial and error means it's pretty much inevitable that, to some extent at least, every organisation has error hardwired into its internal communication practices, not by design, but by default. And it's vital that we recognise this, not just that the error is almost certainly going to be there every day, but that currently it really is nobody's fault. We can't blame people, no matter how high up the organization's hierarchy they may be, for not knowing how to do something they have never been taught to do properly and for which they have no genetic predisposition. So there's no need for anybody to feel guilty, to feel embarrassed or ashamed. There is no need for anybody to be on the defensive about this, because it is a situation we have simply inherited from our forebears. It is part of our cultural inheritance. But it is an inheritance which is, to some extent, kind of hurting everybody. Because, of course, internal communication pervades every other business activity. So to some extent, this inheritance is hurting every business activity, every individual manager, every team, the organization as a whole, and possibly even some of the people the organization serves. Emotionally, financially, reputationally, we have all inherited this bonkers lose situation. So introducing internal communication practice governance, giving line managers the same kind of support in their IC activities as they get for their budget management, is a way we can rein in this inherited lunacy. But would it be worth doing? Because let's face it, it would hardly be a quick sort of 5-minute fix, would it? So in our next podcast, we'll look at how to think about the commercial business case for IC practice governance. What kind of investment would it take, and how much ROI could it deliver? Or if you're keen to explore more about this subject, you can tap into the dozens of free resources available at comgame.co.uk. Thanks for listening. And if you've any observations you want to make about this podcast, you can join us in the IC Practice Governance Group on LinkedIn.